listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician
podcast. Hey there, and welcome to episode number 213 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how are you?
I am great, and today I'm not sure if I was successful in my mission, but I was trying to be the very first artist to post a vertical lyric video on Instagram's new IGTV. And it's at least been published. I can't verify that no one else has beat me to the punch on sharing a vertical lyric video. I don't think we have any news today, but this is kind of news. So, like, Instagram launched this thing called IGTV, which is long-form vertical videos. So I knew about this ahead of time. So last week, I actually made a vertical lyric video for my new song and uploaded it this morning. And I'm just going to go ahead and say that I'm the first.
Okay. Well, remember, even if you're not, we said in a previous episode, it's better to be first to be second.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, just don't fact check me and assume that I was first, and that's cool. But I was curious, did you know about this, first of all, and what the heck do you think about it? Because I know you hate vertical video.
Yeah, well, yes. I updated yesterday. And one, I was surprised when I updated Instagram, you know, when you go to your app updater, it tells you what's new in the app and why you should update. It didn't even mention this. It just said some bug fixes. And I'm like, huh, what? So I downloaded it, and it wasn't as obvious where it was as I thought it would be, because they were calling it IGTV. Is that what they were calling it?
In order to link up IGTV with your Instagram profile, you need to download the IGTV app from the App Store or from Google or whatever, and you can upload videos through that, but then they appear as one of those little circular things at the top of your Instagram profile.
Okay. See, when I looked, I searched, like, I saw it on Twitter. I wasn't really paying attention to when they did the announcement, but I just saw randomly someone post about it on Twitter. So maybe I was in the App Store before everything had officially become available, because there was no IGTV app at that time. So maybe, yeah. Maybe, see, that's the problem of being first. It's everything's not ready. That's why it's better to be
right. Be second.
Best to be second. First to be second. Yes, I hate vertical videos. They're ruining the world. I think we can trace all
greed,
human suffering back to vertical videos.
Right.
And the advent of vertical videos.
It's funny. I think I might be getting swayed to the dark side, because since the platform is, like, made for it, and people are now, like, I had a ton of fun just thinking about how to get the aspect ratio correct, you know, because instead of 1920 by 1080 or whatever, it's the reverse. It's 1080 by 1920. And so just thinking about how to lay something out in video that way was exciting for me.
So I've only messed with it a little, and my first take was, wow, this is not the most conducive environment for watching an hour-long video, because you can upload an hour-long video now through Instagram TV. And the search functionality, like what it was recommending me, it felt more like Instagram stories. Like, if I'm going to sit for an hour, I need to be able to find topics and things like that that I find interesting. And so they've got some work to do. They've got some work to do. It's interesting that they've made that move. I have to say, but on the vertical video front, anyone who's listened to this podcast and this episode so far has understood my feelings toward vertical video. When we were doing a bunch of promotion in Nashville for our album release just a few weeks back, when we were doing our listening party, it wasn't a listening party, it was when we stopped by one of the publications. I handed somebody my phone, and they were videoing vertically, and I got so distracted by it, I lost my place in the song, because I wanted to stand up, say, why are you doing this?
Well, what they need to create...
I can't use that.
Well, it's a pain, because you can't shoot a single thing and then have it work now across all these platforms. You can't have it on YouTube and Facebook and Instagram. But now they need to make an app that simultaneously shoots video both ways from the same, you know,
We'll see how it goes. You know, it's interesting. They've got a long way to go with making long format video, something that people go to Instagram for. But definitely Instagram Stories has been a huge success. The platform is growing like crazy. And it is definitely a useful platform for music promotion. So if you still are not on Instagram, you should be there and start working with that one. That one is one that I think really has a lot of value. And we've been trying to get somebody from Instagram Music at the conference. A lot of red tape there. And I don't think it's going to happen, but I'm hoping that we can still have some good Instagram content like we did last year. But some people from Instagram themselves expressed interest. But then when they went through the corporate ladder, you know how it is. Some people, some companies just make it really challenging for individuals to go out and speak on behalf of their company.
For their employees to be spokespeople, yeah.
And honestly, Instagram is one that I haven't seen very many places. I know they're owned by Facebook, but it seems like they're still kind of run independently. And speaking of the conference, if you do not have your ticket yet, you need to get it. Go to DIYMusicianCon.com. Chris and I will be in Nashville. We'll be hanging out. Lots of great content. We've got a schedule on the site now so you can see some of it. It's not all finalized, but there's a lot of it there. Some themes that are emerging are some online advertising themes. And by advertising, I mean like using Facebook ads to build an audience. A lot of streaming topics. A lot of topics that don't require you to go on the road, but you can still be doing things at home to promote your music, which are the things I like to hear about. So some good stuff happening. We have a much more extensive open mic. We're doing the open mic at the hotel using the equipment and stages there. And the reason we're doing that is because we're throwing a big 20th anniversary party for CD Baby at the conference. And that means we're going to gather everybody there and hopefully have multiple rooms with open mics going. So your chances of playing and getting to, you know, take part in that are going to go way up. Lots That's of good awesome. Stuff. So get your tickets.
And I should know these details, but are we combining all those open mics with the 20th anniversary party, or are they separate?
They yes, yes and no. I will say yes.
Okay.
I say yes and no because
I'm
what
just
we're doing
as confused
is
as I was before.
Instead, what we're doing is after the event, the last session ends on Friday. Instead of sending everybody away and say, hey, go meet up at this location later. What we're doing is we're going to have a big cocktail hour party right there at the hotel. So you don't have to go anywhere. And then that'll go for like an hour, but then the open mics will start in all the various rooms. So all the people will be there. And our hope is to invite maybe some industry people that aren't attending the conference to come to that party, and that they'll also filter into the open mics, and the open mics will go later into the evening, but just creating a more of a party atmosphere, a fun atmosphere. And so everyone doesn't have to leave and feel like they just have to go sit at this venue, even though the open mic's been great. But also what we're trying to do is create a few spaces that are more listening rooms. So if you just really want to meet other attendees and chat, you can stay out in the lobby in the area in the hallway. Right. And for people that want, you know, a more focused listening experience, some of those rooms will be a lot more quiet and focused. I know that's been a complaint in the years past. So it's going to be fun. DIYMusicianCon.com. Get your tickets. Get your hotel room. And we'll see you there because it's going to be a good time. Today, we're going to be talking about the truth about Spotify playlists, part one. And I'll explain all that in a bit. But I've wanted to relay one more thing. In our last episode, we talked about things that we've been trying, and I tried something else this week.
Oh, I'm excited to hear it.
One of the things that was frustrating me is that the reviews we'd been getting from press, national press, all the like quotable things where, you know, to put on our website kept sort of referencing our debut. It was like, people, I acknowledge our catalog. And I don't want to turn a, you know, act like that success we had didn't fuel our career. But a lot has happened since then. We've released a lot of records. And so I kept getting frustrated that there wasn't a quote that that was like, it was hard to find a good positive quote that didn't compare it.
Were all the quotes like, the best thing since their early stuff? Was it along those lines?
They were along those lines, or it was like, if you're hankering for your Doc Martens again. And I'm like making it like we did a retro record, which it's not. It's just, we have a specific sound and it has evolved over the years. And so this just, you know, we've talked about album reviews a lot on the podcast. So I thought I want some real fan reviews that I can use as quotes and say, this is what real people are that listen and like music are saying about our album. So I did a little contest on our Facebook page. You can see it if you go there, facebook.com/smalltownpoets. I took a picture of a signed CD and basically said, well, we're going to give away 5 signed CDs to the most creative and interesting descriptions or reviews of our music of the new album. And you can see exactly what I did and what people responded, how they responded on our Facebook page.
What's funny is I'm just now realizing you were soliciting reviews that didn't harken back to the 90s, but then you put the signed CD in the photograph in the hands of Jar Jar Binks. From The Phantom Menace, which came out in the late 90s, right?
Yes, you know, that's funny, huh? Maybe I just can't escape it.
Yeah. But what happened? Subtle. Did you get a bunch of great reviews?
Yeah, I've got about 12 or so. And the whole reason for the Jar Jar Binks picture was just, I was just trying to find something that would maybe people would think was funny, maybe catch their eye as they're scrolling through their feed, get them to stop, and also trying to inject a little humor into it, because I was like, said something about bonus points for humor, personal anecdotes, random historical references, which I wasn't wanting references to the 90s. I was wondering like historical icon references, just trying to get people to think outside the box. We got some good ones. One of my favorite ones was a review that started with someone saying they first heard of Small Town Poets in a Goodwill in 2014, where they saw our CD, had never heard us before, and bought it. They loved it and went back and bought all our music and have become a huge fan.
Wow. That's really random and really cool.
So we need to do a whole episode of the podcast about having a Goodwill strategy.
Yeah, how to get your used CDs into thrift stores.
So Chris, here you go. All those CDs, boxes of CDs that you have
in my attic.
You just go stuff them in Goodwills.
There you go. Complete coverage. There'll be one Chris Robley CD in every Goodwill on the East Coast.
That's why just one?
I know, I'm not trying not to be overly ambitious here.
So anyway, that went well. I got some quotes. I'm going to use them in an email that's going to go out later today, and I'll probably put them on the website. And so I was just trying to, the goal was I need some more people talking about the album that's not us and that I can use for various purposes. And I felt like I got it. You know, didn't get as many responses as I thought we might, but we were also asking people to do work, and that's always a challenge. So yeah, that was something we tried. Felt like it worked. I got to send those CDs out. Got to remember to do that.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I know you had one mission in mind, which was to get these reviews, but the other thing it did, since you referenced it in an email newsletter, and probably on Twitter, I imagine, like, you were driving engagement on your Facebook page too, which is probably a good thing to do around this release anyways, to get any little bit of, you know, organic reach that you can for your page.
That's true. That's true. All right. Well, today we are going to be talking about the truth about Spotify playlists. And this is going to be a two-parter. I'm going to explain what we're going to do. We're going to split this up. The first part, we're going to be talking about a lot of the groundwork and basic information that you need to know in order to sort of pursue a playlist strategy successfully. A lot of artists are starting to think, okay, there's this playlist thing, I should pay attention to it, but are still just taking stabs in the dark. So we're going to try and create a better foundation today for you to understand what is really going on, how these things really work, and the things to help you navigate and understand what the opportunity might look like. So that's part one, which we're going to talk about today. Part two, which will come next, we are going to talk about actually pitching to playlists. I know we've done an episode about that. At this point, it might have been over a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years. A lot's changed. Mm-hmm. We've learned a lot, and new things have popped up to allow artists to pitch to playlist services. Chris and I have tried three of them with all our results in, and we will give you all the dirt on what worked, what didn't, and not only using services to pitch to playlists, but also just some general strategies, how to find them, and all that kind of stuff. We'll talk a little bit about how to find them today. But that's what we're doing, a two-parter, and let's get into part one right now. All right, Chris, the truth about Spotify playlists. With a headline like that, you better have something good for us. We better have something good for the audience. But
like any good podcaster, we're going to keep that till the very end.
That's so right.
No, just kidding.
You better hang on for 3 hours while we just chat, and then at the end we'll tell you. Actually, like I mentioned, this episode might have some things that you already know, but there's probably a nugget or two of information that you didn't know in this. I think, and if you did know it all, if you did know everything on this podcast, it's a good reminder and of how things are working. And one thing that I think there's a few nuggets of information that we have coming up that I bet a lot of people that work at Spotify don't even know, because some of it has just been through basic observation of like having an artist account, having an artist profile, and having music that I'm releasing that's been getting used in playlists, and seeing some of the relationships and data that's feeding back that unless you're looking at all those things and experiencing it yourself, you may not know what certain numbers mean. So let's start at the beginning. First off, this is my public service announcement. If you have not connected to Spotify for Artists, it is free. You should do so. If you use CD Baby for distribution, all you got to do is log into your account and go to the trending reports page. And there's a big button there. I think there's a button on the home page, on the dashboard as well, that will allow you to connect to your Spotify for Artists account. It happens instantly, and you will get access to so much data and information about your music on Spotify. And some of the stuff that we're going to be talking about today, it's helpful if you're looking at that, and if you are looking at it while we're talking and want to follow along, I think that's advisable as well. So that's the public service announcement. Go do that, and that'll unlock a lot of information for you that we're going to be talking about today.
I have a bit of a public service announcement too. I don't know if you were going to mention this, but I imagine in our discussion and over the next two podcasts, we're going to be mentioning Spotify a lot. But of course, there are playlists across multiple platforms. There's YouTube, of course, has playlist functionality. Apple Music, Deezer, all of these services have playlisting components, so it's important to kind of keep track of that. But Spotify gives artists the most tools to kind of shape their own destiny, as I say, on the platform, and to present themselves in a particular way. So I believe that's why we're going to be focusing so much on Spotify.
Yeah, plus we said the truth about Spotify playlists.
Oh, did we?
Yes. This is one of those times where I know you're checking email while I'm talking.
No, I'm not. I had the truth about playlists in my mind. And so there we go.
You are correct. And I know one of our digital partners is going to be making some big announcements about playlists on their platform in the coming months that I think will be a game changer for that platform. So there are other folks that are jumping in that I think will make this a two-service conversation, two-platform conversation, to a three-platform conversation, meaning that it's not just Spotify. But everyone's been talking about Spotify and playlisting on Spotify, and so just trying to help orient everyone to where to go to understand how to tackle this and see some advances in your music around that platform. Because if you understand how it works, I think there's some good opportunity for your music. With that said, Chris, do you want to tell us what the basic facts about a playlist is? I mean, let's just start there. The word playlist gets used a lot.
Sure.
And I think people understand the concept of, yeah, it's a list of songs, but they don't understand the bigger concept of why they should care.
Yeah. So, I mean, anyone that's below a certain age knows what the hell a playlist is. If you're above a certain age, just think of it like a mixtape. It's a way to organize songs outside of an album context. It could be a bunch of songs from a single artist, but, you know, organized by some other principle. Maybe it's a greatest hits or whatever. Or more often as playlists include songs by multiple artists. So it could be organized around a theme or a mood or a year or pretty much anything. There's unlimited ways to organize songs. And I think that is one of the most exciting things about playlists and why people care about them so much is because although they may not think about it directly in these terms, what it does is give a lot of power to artists' back catalog because an old song can be put in unlimited new context when you just put it in and amongst other songs by other artists that relate to it in some way. So that's really cool. Another thing is that playlists are kind of an ideal way of passively listening to music. You know, it's kind of like when someone used to hand you a mixtape. There was an excitement about discovering what they thought you should hear. But you didn't have to put in the work of making the mixtape yourself. It was sort of delivered to you, and then hopefully you find some new stuff you love. So it's really kind of an ideal way for new music to get found.
Well, there's a couple things you said there that I'd like to highlight. In your notes that you sent me, you said unlimited ways to recontextualize your music. And I think that points back to what we've talked a lot about on the podcast about how release dates no longer matter. And I've been saying that a lot when I speak publicly at conferences. And that's, to me, one of the big boosts to artists and their whole catalog is that people aren't going to the new release bin in a store anymore and focusing on that. They're looking at searching for music in more of like context or keywords. And so that allows the focus to be put back solely on the music, which for artists, that's what we want ultimately, is that the focus is on the music, not arbitrary things like a release date.
Right. And I mean, this just reiterates what you just said, but I have discovered music I absolutely love listening to playlists and adding them to my own playlist. And I have never once given a shred of a damn when the stuff came out. Like, which is so cool because the blogosphere and the music press and the music industry, you know, sort of the big music industry is so obsessed with new. And like, if it's already out, it's old news. And like, screw that. Like, all of your music can be evergreen, as we say, which is really liberating and exciting.
Yeah. The other thing that you said something else in there. Oh, passive listening. That was one thing, is that a lot of people haven't recognized, especially people that have been like streaming holdouts or upset about it, that there's been a shift from active listening to passive listening. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you don't like the music you're hearing and you're not loving it and you're not totally engaged. That's still happening. But what I would say is what's probably the biggest shift is, you know, in the CD era, because I'm going to CDs because it's easier to explain. I remember traveling around in my car when I'd be, you know, on the road with Small Town Poets. I had a big CD wallet. I'd open it up and I had to go through it and decide, what do I want to listen? And I had to pick an exact album, an exact artist, and that's what I was going to be listening to for the next 30 minutes or so. Where with the playlist, a lot of the way people are engaging with music has nothing to do with the artist itself. It's just a music or style, and what comes up, if it fits in that style or that theme, they like it and they enjoy it. Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to go be super fans of that artist, but they enjoyed the music, and it's more of a passive experience. They're not seeking out artists they specifically like all the time. They're just finding music in playlists and enjoying that playlist. I experienced that yesterday when I was out walking on my break here at work. There was a playlist that I put on, and there was some tracks. I'm like, oh man, I totally dig this. And, you know, I didn't necessarily save it. Sometimes I do, but it's just a different experience. And we also see that there are like true passive listening experiences where it's just background music. I think a lot of the stuff we're seeing artists having huge success on Pandora and some of the playlist successes because it's a nice playlist to put on in the background in an office environment or a dentist office or some place that creates a mood, and people aren't bookmarking every artist, but they're enjoying the experience it creates.
Yeah, well, two additions to that. And I think about 5 to 7 years ago, we were hearing a lot of music discovery is dead. And I think you and I may have even done a podcast about that. Like, no one cares about music discovery anymore. I think playlists, particularly on Spotify, have turned that around completely. Music discovery seems to me to be very alive. And I am more excited about music than I've been in a really long time because of Spotify. And then, you know, another complaint about the availability of digital music, whether it was downloads or streams or whatever, is that like it's killing people's interest in an artist's broader work. I completely disagree with when it comes to streaming. I think streaming has saved albums in a way, because unlike with downloads, if you heard a single song and you liked it, there was a big barrier to explore more of that artist's music. You'd have to, you know, fork over another $10. With streaming, you've already paid the money. And there's literally nothing except one click between you and saying, oh, I like that song. What's the whole album sound like? So I've been listening to a lot more, albums and or full playlists of a single artist's music, which I think is also kind of the point of why we should be excited about this.
Yeah. The one thing I'd say about your music discovery is dead comment, I think the download world really drove that feeling, because it became this ever-growing beast of folders of MP3s that had to be managed, went missing, mm-hmm. weren't updated, were old file types. And it becomes this paralysis of choice. And I think that Spotify, why people are excited about what they're doing, is they've seemed to have struck this balance of being able to build a catalog that's downloaded to your phone and still having access to everything while actually employing some very specific devices to keep their users discovering new music in a way that feels like almost the best of all the worlds, where right. I don't have to do so much work to discover new stuff, and I don't have to do all this work to manage files, but I can download stuff and have it offline if I want, and I can also feel like, hey, there's a lot of real quick, easy places I can go if I want to hear new music. And I think that really benefits independent artists. So those are some of the things why I think it's important for you to understand just a little background information. If you're still new to Spotify, which we get a lot of emails to the podcast, people like, oh, okay, I'm going to give this streaming thing a shot. Or, you know, we still hear people like, I'm holding out. So I wanted to put that information out there of a little background information. Now let's move into the types of playlists and how they work, because this is where it starts getting very key to understanding what the platform is doing on your behalf as an artist, what opportunities you have, and at multiple levels. Chris, you want to run down the list of the types of playlists?
Yeah, I'll go real quick through them, and then we can talk about them a little more in depth. So I think of them in three main categories. The first being user-generated playlists, and that could be your own playlist, it could be an artist created playlist, it could be other people's playlists, it could even be a collaborative playlist, in a way falls under user generated. The second kind is like an automated playlist, which is created by an algorithm. It's intended to be personalized for you. So that would be like Discover Weekly and Release Radar, things like that. And then the third category is an editorial playlist, which has been created by the staff at Spotify.
Yeah. So those are the three big buckets. And first, you know, let's talk really briefly about, let's see, I'm pulling up the list on my Spotify for Artists account. So yeah, you mentioned Discover Weekly, Release Radar, Your Daily Mix is another one. Then there's just flat out Spotify Radio. And what that is like, if I go and I listen to a band's album, when the album ends, it doesn't just stop playing music. It kicks over into what they call radio, where it just starts pulling tracks that it thinks you're going to like that are related to that album. So it could be more by that artist. It could be other artists' music. So that's another way for your music to get discovered. Things like your top songs for 2017. I'm still getting some streams from that. So they do these, you know, wrap up automated playlists. And then this one that they just did, which I was listening to yesterday. That's the one, Your Summer Rewind. It's kind of a cool cover. And that's the one I was listening to yesterday that was playing some cool tracks that I'm like, oh yeah, this was music I was listening to last summer. And so they do those like sort of seasonal automated playlists as well. They're all generated by the algorithm based on what you've listened to. I cannot figure these out to save my life. It's weird.
You can't figure them out in that you don't feel like when you open yours, they're relevant to your actual tastes?
Well, for the Discover Weekly, I'll listen to a couple artists, and then it feels like the next Discover Weekly is so much in that genre. But I can't figure them out by looking at how many followers we have, and I can see that in our stats, like they'll show it to a few more people, and we'll get a little bump from Discover Weekly, and then it kind of trails off for a couple weeks, and then it seems like it shows up in some other people's Discover Weekly. So having just released a new album, we got a lot of release radar hits from that first week. It's showing up in people's release radar. But Discover Weekly, I just don't understand how it does that. And even release radar, it's weird what songs might show up and what songs don't. But they're all automated, and they're worth watching, and there are some things that help trigger that, releasing more music and whatnot. But that's that automated group, and they call it personalized. So that's how Spotify classifies them over editorial, which is the next kind.
Well, and before you make the jump there, I was just going to say, we've mentioned on this podcast before that Spotify themselves talk about how those personalized playlists overall are driving more streams than the editorial ones that I think you're about to talk about. So
yeah, absolutely.
They are highly impactful.
Yes, they are. And that's confusing. Like Discover Weekly, I've heard artists say like, wow, a bunch of people must have just got our music in Discover Weekly because we saw a huge spike. And I've seen some little spikes from Discover Weekly, but I just can't figure out how it goes about doing it. Because it's clearly like, even months later, that it still throws it in someone's Discover Weekly, but it doesn't just do it all at once. And it's not only new tracks. So Discover Weekly can impact even your old catalog. Like my Discover Weekly, it's always a mix of like a lot of classic content, stuff that's, you know, more recent, and then brand new stuff. So it's a good mix, and it's a good way for artist music to keep getting pushed to potential fans. Now, the editorial ones, those are the ones that most people are talking about. And those are the ones that Spotify themselves program. Usually the top tier playlists in this category are what people are dreaming of and hoping they'll get put on. But there are actually thousands of editorial playlists, and they're not all handcrafted.
They don't all have 3 million followers.
Nope, they don't. And they're not all handcrafted. There are some, like I've talked about that New Music Friday playlist that our tracks have popped into every time we've released new music. It's for our genre. So it's like New Music Friday, Christian. I think they've got like 25 different genre ones of these. And then they have one big New Music Friday one, which is like the mothership of the New Music Friday ones. Ours had that one, when we had some tracks in, had 40,000 followers. We didn't get as many plays as you would think. We did get a nice bump. I think when our album came out, the track that was in there, I think got over the course of a week, like 4,000 plays. And then they remove it every Friday. So they freshen it up every Friday. Some of that's being done by the algorithm. Some of it's people actually throwing tracks in there.
And in a way, it's like the farm team in a baseball league system, where it's like they're putting all the new, not all the new stuff. They put a select bunch of new things in there. They test it out. They see how it does. And then they can kind of move those things up through their playlisting.
Yeah. So it's like their filtering system of way to filter, find up and coming artists, find tracks that people are really enjoying, and look for other opportunities. So with our latest release, something happened. It was the first time this had happened before. That song that was in the New Music Friday playlist got put into another official Spotify playlist called Sing a New Song. And this one has about 25,000 followers. And this one, it's been in there 2 weeks so far. So I'm hoping it just stays there for a while. We'll see. I don't know if it's a newer playlist, but it's definitely one of those lower level official Spotify playlists where they're seeing how music performs on, you know, on a playlist where it sits longer than just a week. So that was kind of exciting, but also interesting to see it. Again, it has 25,000 followers. And honestly, it's an official Spotify playlist, but it's not our top performing playlist for us by a long shot.
Well, and I've heard you talk about this before. Both of those playlists are not genre specific, right?
The New Music Friday one is. The Sing a New Song, I think, is as well.
I mean, when I say genre, like, I know it's all Christian music, which seems to be more of a theme.
Yes.
But like you could have a hip hop track next to like a metal track next to a pop rock.
Absolutely. And that's the New Music Friday one is really all over the place and makes it a challenge to just put on and listen to in the background.
It also seems like it would make it hard for Spotify to determine how to rank the performance of things within a playlist.
That's what was confusing to me, because for this last release, I actually did meet the person who is the curator for Spotify Christian. And specifically submitted a song. He used a different song. And he said he put it in that playlist and we'll see how it performs. I'm like, really looking in at the performance. Yeah, I was sharing it all that week off the playlist and having other people share it. And we were like the 30th song down. And I was thinking, I wonder how they really rank this and what they're looking for. Because it's not reasonable to think that track 30 is going to perform the same as track 1 through 5. I mean, you're going to get less streams the further down the list you are. You're going to get less shares and saves because less people are hearing it. So how do they really gauge how a song is performing? That was my question. And we may have some anecdotal evidence of what it might be. I mean, we hear that, you know, saving and complete listens and shares are important. But I don't know if there's like some sort of percentage, like little math equation they put it all into, and this is your number. And that song has this number. And even though it's track 40, it has this number that kind of levels the playing field. And as far as like from a data perspective, I don't know.
Sure. And also, I remember you saying there's like some Spanish language songs kind of thrown in there amongst mostly English speaking songs.
The first,
right? So it's like if someone then goes and skips that Spanish language song, it seems to be kind of a worthless negative metric, like, because, well, that song maybe shouldn't have been served to this person if they really want English content. So
that playlist is interesting. Like I was saying, I think it's mostly algorithmically driven. But I think that it is something that editors do potentially throw a track in. He told me he specifically put it in this time, but I know for a fact that all the other times we popped up in that playlist, it was not a human doing it. It's just impossible. I released a live track and it ranked the same week that I released a single from our album that is now out. And they both got pulled into that playlist and the live track was much higher up on the list. And it's just, it just wouldn't happen. It had some explicit content in there, had a bunch of like Spanish stuff next to English stuff. And it just was a really odd listening experience that did not fit New Music Friday Christian that, you know, if a human curated it, they'd never have made it that way. So now we've got the listener generated ones, the user generated playlists. And this, I think, is where there is the most opportunity for you as an independent artist. So it's really important to understand what's happening here, who's making these playlists, and how. Well, in the next part of the episode, we'll talk about how to find these people, but just understanding what these playlists are and what's happening in this world, I think, is important.
If you're talking about indie curators, there can be a lot of different motivations for them to make these playlists, like Indie Mono, like from, I don't know the guy that runs that, but from what I've heard, he's just a huge music fan and wants to just share good stuff. There's a lot of playlisters out there who are like taking submission fees, and that's kind of like creepy. It's like the Playola thing. Like, so for them, it's a, you know, a kind of creepy commercial endeavor. I think for someone like Michael Warner, who we've talked to a lot, he created his playlists partially out of interest in sharing the music, but also because he wanted to build playlist assets that could kind of give him an in when he's trying to place his own music with other playlisters or labels or whatever, and sort of a half networking, half just loving sharing new music. And I'm sure there's a dozen other reasons why people would create these things.
Yeah, so in user-generated playlists, that can include a, like you mentioned, Indie Mono, like somebody who's doing a playlist brand, but they're not Spotify, and they don't have any other sort of Spotify hookup, giving them some sort of different access. It's just, they're just making playlists. They've created a brand, and they've built up some valuable playlists. There's people that are just random users that have stumbled on good keywords, and their list has just built a following over the years. And, you know, there's radio stations that are creating playlists around the music that they're playing on the radio. There's all sorts of different kinds of people in this group. The thing that was, I think, most interesting to me that was sort of an aha moment was once I connected to Spotify for Artists, and you look at the playlist that your music is being used in, they've opened it up where it'll show a lot more playlists than they used to. They used to just show the top 10, but now, like right now, it's showing me 67 of 1,300 playlists. And the ones at the bottom of the list have two streams. So that must be the ones that actually reported something, at least two streams over the course of 28 days. And you can adjust the viewpoint to like all time, and you might find some others. But what was interesting to me was to see the different types of topics and types of playlists people were creating that they were adding our music to. It was some interesting connections that I wouldn't have thought of otherwise. So it's very important and interesting to get into the data and see how people are thinking about your music, because it could be different. Huh, I just saw this one, Chris. A playlist titled The Forgotten History of Chris. we have a song in there. I don't know the connection, but and so it might present some opportunities. Like, for example, we got added to a couple like chill playlists, a couple of our tracks. And so I thought, oh yeah, I gotta stop thinking about our catalog as how people roll up the idea of our band into one specific genre, or tend to think of us related to these artists when they look at our catalog as a whole. When I start piecing out song by song, there might be some different ways that I can contextualize the music that works really well in the playlist world. So
we've been talking about indie curators and, you know, user-generated playlists in the context of playlists that have, you know, a decent sized following, I think, here. But obviously that's like the more sexy placement that you want to get. But this category also includes like your cousin who just has a private playlist for working out or whatever. And so it can be part of your, you know, whatever strategy to just make sure your fans are encouraged to add your music to their playlist, because that will, you know, do something to prove that that music's worth going a little bit further in Spotify's ecosystem.
Yeah. Yeah. And we can get into a lot of those strategies in part two, because I think there's a lot of simple things you can do to just start to get the ball rolling a little bit. So is there anything else to say on user generated? I think we haven't talked about collaborative playlists. Let's talk about collaborative playlists. What are those?
Sure. So it's like, It's a playlist that's generated by multiple users. So if you create a playlist, you can designate it as collaborative. And then anyone else who knows about it and follows that playlist can then make changes. They can change the songs in the playlist. They can change the order of the songs. They can change, I believe they can change the cover art and the description. Is that true?
I'm yes.
Not sure. So basically you're kind of crowdsourcing the playlist, and that has tons of different uses. It can be another staging ground for, filtering music. It could be asking your fans to help you create an ideal set list, or what music you should be listening to in the van when you're on tour. Just like the other unlimited context is that applies to collaborative lists as well.
Yeah. So one thing to know is anyone who has that link can go and change the playlist. If you open it up to a broad audience to collaborate with that playlist, expect some surprises. But also, if you are using this collaborative playlist to, you know, maybe try and build a cool playlist that features a lot of the music from maybe bands in your scene, in your city, at some point, if you want the playlist to actually show up on Spotify for Artists and all that, you got to make it public. You got to change it from collaborative to public. With Hello Morning, the band I had here in Portland, who, you know, we don't do anything anymore, but our catalog's still out there and still great music. I was doing a lot of like testing of collaborative playlists to see if I could get, you know, this band that pretty much has no streams, some streams. And it was tough to see if the streams I was seeing were because of collaborative playlists, because it didn't report that that stream came from these playlists. So that's one thing to know about collaborative playlists.
Well, and you alluded to this, but another thing you should expect is if you ask another artist to add one of their songs, expect them to add 12.
And to put them in the number one slot.
Yeah.
So it's a user-generated one, but it's slightly different. You know, when you set it up, you may have to do it on a desktop as well in order to access the collaborative playlist feature. I'm not entirely sure. Lastly, the last playlist you mentioned was the artist-created playlist. So it's a very good idea to create a playlist that you have attached to your artist account on Spotify. And what you need to do in order to do this is you're going to have to create a user account for your band.
Unless you're a solo singer-songwriter, then you can just use your name.
Yes. So in your case, you just have your regular Chris Robley account, correct?
I just have one account, and I use it for listening and for managing my music.
So for us, for managing our playlists that show up on Spotify, I have a separate free Spotify account for Small Town Poets. And that's what I've attached to our artist account. And when I'm creating playlists for the band, I have to log out of my personal account, which is a paid account, and log into that one to create a playlist. And those playlists will show up publicly on the band page. So that may be something you haven't figured out yet. That's how you have to do it. For solo artists, your life is easier in so many different ways. And this is one of them.
I still do have to go to Spotify for Artists into the playlists, the profile section, and manually move of all my playlists that I have. I still need to select the ones I want to be featured from my artist profile.
Yes, there's still features that you have to go to the Spotify for Artists site in order to update, or in using the app as well. You can't just do it from the normal account. But that's how you do that. And then you can create it. And I think this is an opportunity for an artist to, things like you said, set lists. You can try some things like all these user-generated playlists, like whether it be a theme. I've already seen Christmas 2018 playlists. And so it's like, for us, we have two Christmas albums. I should change the title of my Christmas playlist to that and start promoting that some and getting traction around that. It's easy for you to start building a following around one specific playlist and change the playlist over time. It doesn't have to stay the same theme. You can change the title. You can change the image at any time. So if it's something where it's like this dialogue between you and your fans and a way to keep them engaged in your music, you know, changing it out could be fun and it still retains all those followers.
Right. So one way that our friend Ben Hubbard described that about playlists is that a playlist is basically like an album drop that goes on forever. So you can continuously change things. And for me, it was useful to hear that because I'd created a playlist with some behind the scenes audio content to, you know, describe the making of this particular album. And I made a playlist for it. And when I did, it was very focused on that album title, you know, like this particular album. But if I want to do a behind the scenes thing for another album, I don't need to create a whole new playlist. I can just add that to this playlist and then change the title to simply be kind of a catch-all for all the behind-the-scenes stuff I do, And I don't lose those followers. They're already there, poised to hear the kind of newest thing I've done. But, saves you work from having to create separate playlists for every single idea you have.
Absolutely. So it's a good way for you to get creative, thinking theme, thinking season, thinking other artists or collectives that you can bring together or whatever. This is a place where you can do that. And I found an artist who is doing, I think, an interesting job with this. And it's one of our top playlists that our music is in. His name's Jerry Fee. Super nice guy. He came out to our listening party in Nashville. He's a fan of the band, but he has this playlist called Modern Christian Music. And it's a very nice playlist cover he has. It's very attractive. And he keeps it updated. And he has some of his tracks in there. And I think it's a very good example of a perfectly curated playlist where he has his own music. And he has a decent amount of followers of the playlist. And people are clearly listening to it because we're getting a consistent number of streams off that playlist. And I just thought, oh, that's an example as an artist of, you know, creating a playlist and trying to create an experience that draws in people that will like your music. And even your fans, they don't want to listen to your music 100% of the time. So if you create an experience for them with a playlist that encapsulates a lot of the music you know they probably like, maybe they'll just keep listening to that and give you more streams than having them dig around trying to find other things to listen to. So if they know that there's a good landing spot that you've created, that's a good listening experience for them, that's something that you can, you know, that's a good way to use that feature. All right, we should move along. I think we've talked through all the playlist types enough to draw a distinction and help people understand what they are and how they're different and start seeing the whole landscape a little clearer. I think one thing that I'd want to jump to now is talk a little bit about the artist profile and what followers mean, what monthly listeners mean. And this is something that I think is helpful when you're looking around Spotify and trying to figure out, okay, how do I locate playlists? How do I understand or how do I find out which artists are doing things that I might be able to imitate or, just trying to figure out what is driving success on the platform? There's a lot of information you can get from the artist profile. And, you know, the followers numbers, a lot of times we get fixated on follower numbers. And quite honestly, it can mean a lot or it can mean nothing. But in the case of an artist profile, typically getting more followers means that you're going to increase your chances of triggering things like Release Radar, Discover Weekly. It really just gives Spotify more data about the kind of people that like your music. So,
and Release Radar isn't just a playlist. It's also an email that Spotify will send to some of your followers to drive them to the playlist. But basically, your followers are the ones that are most likely to receive an email notification that you have new music on Spotify.
Yes. And both Chris and myself have been included in those emails recently with no indication about how many people got it. I could have been the only one that got it for Chris, and you could have been the only one that got it for me. So who knows?
Well, no, I did receive emails from forwards from several other people. So I know at least 5 people got it.
The most intriguing stat to me, and I think this is the one that is telling about what's going on the Spotify platform, is the monthly listeners. And this is how many individual unique users have listened to at least one song for that artist in the past 28 days.
And when you say listen to one song, I think they're tallying that as 30 seconds, right?
Yeah, correct. So that's what that number means. So that doesn't mean every day that many people are listening to that artist. It means on average, over the course of 28 days, they call it their average monthly listeners. That's what they're coming up with. And it's not really an average because it's not like they're averaging anything.
It's an actual total.
It's a total,
right?
And it changes day by day based on the streams you get every day. So it's not really an average, but that's what they call it. What is interesting to me about this when you're navigating around Spotify is that when you start looking at the average monthly listeners compared to the followers, you can really start having a better understanding of what is driving different artists' success. So, for example, our designer here on the marketing team at CD Baby, his name's Josh. He has a brother-in-law who his artist name is The Dead Tongues. They released a new album recently, and he came into my office a couple days ago, Josh, not the artist, and said, "Man, can you check out his Spotify profile? Something crazy is happening. We're trying to figure out what's going on." And I pull up his profile, and right now when I look at it, he's got 687,000 monthly listeners.
Monthly listens.
And when you look at the number of followers, it's only 4,347. And Small Town Poets, we only have a few hundred less followers than him, but we do not have 687,000 monthly listeners. So clearly, it's not being driven by a fan base. It's being driven by the platform. And when you go look on the About page and you see the Discovered on, he's got placement in all these massive Spotify playlists at the moment.
The big indie folk.
He got the artist feature picture on the big New Music Friday playlist. So what's intriguing is, like, you can see how the platform is totally driving all this success. Where you go to some other artists, like I was looking at the band Switchfoot, their profile. They have like a million monthly listeners, but they also have hundreds of thousands of followers on their profile. So you could say, oh, their fan base is driving a lot of the activity. And the reason why I think it's important is that you can start really understanding which playlists actually deliver listens and which ones don't. Because the one stat that's out there that most people, the one I mentioned that people at Spotify may or not even know this, is that when you look at an artist about page, you see a number next to the Discovered On playlist list. So for that artist, The Dead Tongues, right now I'm looking at Summer Acoustic is number one. It's a Spotify playlist, and it says 244,000 listeners. Well, I click on that. That playlist has 1.5 million followers. So that listener number on the artist page is the actual number of people that have listened to that particular artist. So why that's helpful is you can go see where that artist is on, placed on that playlist. And if they're near the top, you can see, oh, if I'm near the top of this list, I'll probably get this many listeners. And then you could go to the artist that's at the bottom of that list and probably go to their artist page and gauge an understanding of how many listeners you might get from that same playlist with 1.5 million followers. But if I'm at the bottom of the list, does that make sense at all, Chris?
It makes complete sense. And it can be used in the reverse way too, there could be a playlist that has 70,000 followers. You go and you look at the number one track artist on there and it doesn't even show up in their top, you know, whatever list of playlists on that about page. That might suggest to you that, okay, a lot of those 70,000 followers should be in quotes followers because they're not actively listening to this playlist. So it can kind of inform which ones might be less worth your time in pursuing.
Yeah. And I think it really is going to come into play when we talk about pitching to these playlists next week. And we're going to talk a little bit about finding some of these playlists to wrap up for today. But to me, this has been the biggest aha moment of playlisting and trying to figure out how to really focus my efforts in a place that's going to matter. So if you go to the Small Town Poets page on Spotify, which I'm sure everyone has bookmarked.
Excellent. Excellent plug, by the way.
Chris's page and our page, because remember, there's that whole 1,000 streams a piece deal we had with the listeners.
Yeah, right.
And I'm sure they're all listening and streaming to make good on that, even though they didn't agree to it. We just enforced.
So for anyone who's this is your first episode listening to this, basically, you need to listen to our songs 1,000 times.
Yeah, that's the deal.
That's our unspoken agreement we have with you.
But if you go to the Small Town Poets page, you click on the About link, you'll see some playlists there. Right now, number 5 on our page is that Modern Christian Music by Jerry Fee. And it says 145 listeners. So if I click on that, he's got 429 followers. That is a high listener to follower ratio. And
that's a good engagement.
That playlist actually generates streams for us. So when you think about playlists that you're looking at, it's really easy to go, oh, this playlist has 100,000 followers. I'm going to go after that one. I've seen Spotify playlists with 25, 50,000 followers where the engagement is basically non-existent. So that's one real easy way for you to sort of find out where those diamonds in the rough might be as far as playlists. So what I was doing last night, I was up way too late last night and ended up creating a spreadsheet. You know, it's getting serious when I start creating a spreadsheet.
Of course. There you go.
And started.
That's why you got into rock and roll.
Is to create spreadsheets.
Lead guitar and spreadsheets.
I got down this rabbit hole of like finding stuff and I just couldn't stop. So what I was doing is I went to our profile and I go, fans also like, and I looked at it and then I clicked on somebody. I went to see what playlist they were featured in. I'm like, huh, there's some playlists that they're featured on that we're not, and it might be some overlap. And then I found some user-generated ones that seemed accessible, and you know, they didn't have 50,000 followers, but they're actually generating some streams, and that's what I want. And so it's just a way for you to see which playlists actually have listeners and which ones are just a bunch of BS followers. Because if you focus on that follower number, and this is going to play into the pitching discussion next time and paying people to pitch, if you focus on that follower number, you can waste a lot of money and not accomplish your goals of getting more streams. So to recap, go to an artist page, click on the about, look at the discovered on, and see the playlists that are listed there. Notate the number of listeners that playlist is returning for the artist. So for us, the top one is we got added to this Rock Ballads 80s playlist. And it's given us 1,200 listeners in the last 28 days. I click on that. The playlist has 34,000 followers. We're like the 10th song. That seems like a good level of engagement for a 10th song for a random user-generated playlist. And so that's how I go about that. And then you know, you can do that with the other artists and sort of narrow down and find playlists that might be higher value to getting streams, but not as sexy looking if we're just going by follower numbers.
Yeah, you know, you've made me curious now. I got a song put in this rock 90s singles playlist, which would have never been something that I would have thought to pitch to. But then when it got, because it's Soundgarden and Nirvana and all these, you know, 90s songs, I didn't think new tracks would be included in that, but the song is kind of 90s rock-ish. And now I'm curious where it sits in the, you know, what position it has. I'm looking, 103 out of 300 songs, and it got me about 90 plays over the last day or
two. 92 listeners, because that's not streams, that's listeners. At least on your...
Listeners, right.
Because they could stream it a bunch.
Right, but on the other hand, the playlist has almost 60,000 followers, so I don't know how that pans out, but I think if it's 100 songs deep into this playlist, like that still seems pretty decent to me.
Yeah, and the playlist that you mentioned, it's hard to go back and sort of verify numbers. Who's number one?
Soundgarden was a couple
if
days
ago. If you go
ago.
To Soundgarden's page, it's not going to show this playlist. They're going to be on like right. some mega rock Spotify playlist. So you're not going to be able to cross-reference that number to see how valuable that playlist is.
When I see a playlist like that with so many songs, I assume it's this type of thing that people subscribe to put on shuffle and they just leave it on.
I would agree.
You know, very passively, but in some context where 90s rock makes sense to passively listen.
I would agree. That makes sense. So that's the one thing. To me, that's the biggest thing I've sort of figured out. And as far as like trying to find playlists, that's a good tool to use by being able to cross-reference the people that are in the list with their artist profile to get a true number of the listeners they're getting off of that and forget that follower number. Followers can still be great, but everything can be faked these days and the way playlists are using or what playlists are doing to prop up that number. So this will be more important to kind of double check the validity of a playlist when you start trying to pitch and decide what to spend time on. A couple other things really quick that I want to mention is that, you know, that artist, the Dead Tongues I mentioned, brother-in-law to the our designer here at CD Baby, when he came in and showed me that, he's like, oh my gosh, look at this, this explosion of being added to these mega Spotify playlists. The first thing I noticed, he had no bio and no links on his about page. So one of the things you need to do on Spotify for Artists is add the links. You can add Wikipedia, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Those are the only ones they let you add.
You're reminding me, there's a guy named Jeffrey Martin. He's a Portland, Oregon songwriter who I like his music. He shows up in my Discover Weekly, you know, fairly often. I checked out his music, no bio. He's got 50,000 monthly listeners. Like, you know, he's doing decent on Spotify, but no bio. So Jeffrey, if you're listening, fill out your bio.
You know, a lot of times you could say no one's actually clicking through. The interesting thing that I discovered using some tools, I think it's Next Big Sound that's the one that was telling me this, which is a free tool anyone can get. It's connected to Pandora, is that Wikipedia was the number one site people were going to for us. And I'm like, why on earth are people going to Wikipedia? And yeah, if you search small town poets, of course, Wikipedia is going to pop up. But I realized it's because that's what Spotify lets you link to. And so, of course, I had to go do a Wikipedia cleanup because I had neglected Wikipedia. But I'm like, interesting. There must be people really using this. So I was talking to Josh, our designer, today. He told me that they updated that and they are seeing a lot more traffic going to Twitter and Facebook and all that because they added those links on the artist bio. It's one of those things that, you know, if no one's going to your page, yeah, it's not doing anything. But success can happen unexpectedly. And that's one of the cool things about how these platforms are starting to change how they work. That artist, he had had the Dead Tongues. He had, looking in the numbers, had had some streaming success in the past. Nothing like this. It was like an enormous spike. I think I could pull up the numbers and it was like bumping along, got some decent streams, and then kind of it died down a bit. But then it was just instantaneous, went to getting like 50,000 streams a day with the addition of these playlists, and was totally unexpected. And it's one of those exciting things that I hope it happens to every artist. Unfortunately, it probably won't, but that's one of those things that's cool about how these platforms work. So make sure you got a bio, make sure you put the pictures in and the links, because if you start getting traction, you don't want to lose that. You want to try and capture those fans as many places as you can so you can keep in contact with them. Is there anything else that we need to talk about?
Well, you had mentioned best practices for building your own playlist.
Why don't you run down the list real fast?
So maybe we touched on these kind of, but understanding the goal of making your own playlist that you're going to feature from your band profile, and making sure you make a regular habit of it, you know, updating it weekly or at least monthly, but even that seems a little bit kind of slack. So there has to be a reason why someone would subscribe or follow this playlist. Otherwise, they could just listen to it once, call it good, and move about their life. But you want to give them a reason to keep coming back. So it's good to keep updating it. You want to have a good playlist photo, which, you know, think of it like an album cover. That's eye-catching and that kind of, you know, evokes the mood or the theme or the genre or whatever. You got to be really careful about the keywords you use in your playlist description. I don't mean like careful, like beware, but just choose smart keywords that might reference the other artists or the genres or whatever. And then what else? There's probably a few other things.
One thing I'd mention about playlists is that it can take a long time for them to show up in search, and they may never show up in search. So that's why it's, if you're trying to build something around your brand as a band, it's very important that it's actually attached to the band's profile, because that's most likely how a lot of people will find it. You can obviously link to it and share it, but people being able to search by your band and get to the playlist that way is most likely going to be the way that the easiest way for them to get to it, just by, like, you know, browsing around the platform.
Yeah, unless your playlist is dedicated to one artist's music, you know, let's say it's all your own music. If that's not the case, it's generally a good rule of thumb to just have one song per artist, because Spotify likes to show diversity and favor, you know, listening diversity. And as well as another good rule of thumb, which I know applied a couple years ago, I don't know how you know, if the same best practices apply now, but it used to be that 20 to 60 songs was a good range, you know, so build out your playlist. And then if it gets much past that, you can start shuffling some songs off the list and moving new things on, but definitely more than 20, because if it's less, then it doesn't become quite as attractive a passive listening experience for someone who might just be in their cubicle and wants to zone out for 3 hours.
Yeah. And when I was saying search, a lot of the playlists that I've seen that are coming up in search seem to be older. So it may be that there was this period where things got grandfathered in. One thing that does not seem to impact searchability is the number of followers, because when I search some keywords, some of the top playlists that come up that are user generated have had hardly any followers for certain keywords. So it's still sort of a mystery what the search situation is, but just have it attached to your band account. Fill out the description. I think you mentioned the description. The description allows you to link places. You can link to other users' accounts on Spotify and artist account pages and such. So that's a good tool to get people linking around. Also gives more keywords. And I'm sure that the playlists that do get featured, you have a better chance of getting featured in search if you've got all that stuff filled out.
Also, it matters what happens kind of off the platform too. So, you know, if your playlist is getting promoted on Facebook and Twitter and, or email or whatever, and people are linking to Spotify to hear your playlist, that's going to show Spotify that it might be of interest to other people. Embed the playlist on your website or you know, wherever you can do that. So just sort of activity off of Spotify that leads back to Spotify is always helpful.
I've got like charts and diagrams here, but it's one of those things that I know for some, it's like we mentioned at the top, you might've known a lot of this or most of it. There's still lots of artists that really haven't connected all the dots. And to me, that was a huge help when someone actually sat down and explained it to me, beyond just, hey, this is a way where you can throw your favorite songs in a list and listen to it. When I started understanding how the platform works, then it started bringing to light the opportunity that the platform itself is offering to artists and how to go about looking for that opportunity. So the next episode, part two of the Truth About Spotify playlist, we're going to dive into more of the finding playlist, figuring out which ones are worth pitching, how to pitch to them, and some services out there that we've tried that you can pay to pitch on your behalf. And the results that we've gotten, and I think just sort of give people a better understanding about the whole idea of pitching to get on playlists, because I've been hearing that a lot. I've seen people that do it well. We've been trying things, so we're going to discuss it and break it down next time.
So next one will be the real truth about Spotify.
The real
playlists.
Truth. Yeah. The real truth. This was just the truth. But in part two, we will really get into a lot of those tips and tricks and ideas around that.
Can't wait.
All right. So you're going to come up with all those tips and tricks, right? Because I've got nothing.
Yeah. And what I was also going to say is between now and then, I'm going to have a song just go nuts on Spotify.
Perfect.
And I'll have like millions and millions of streams to brag about.
Perfect.
It's pretty much guaranteed.
Guaranteed. All right. Excellent. Can we schedule that in? Can I go ahead and schedule the podcast recording?
Yeah, please. Because I think it's the power of positive thinking, right? If you just imagine it.
Perfect.
You're going to manifest it.
Perfect. All right. All joking aside, we have had some decent wins on the playlisting side. I think both of us have had some decent wins that have brought broader learning.
Yeah. Well, you know, my Spotify activity, I think, you know, compared to people who are more active music making, is not much to brag about. But one thing that I think is cool is that as I've become a little bit more active making music again and putting out a series of singles over the past year, it's definitely the case that every single one of them gets more and more listens than the one before. And each time I have that little spike, the monthly listeners is higher than the last time. And so it's sort of, you know, I call it scalable wisdom. Like, I can see this stuff working at any level you're at, whether you've got millions of fans or, you know, a few hundred or thousands or whatever. Like, it's working basically. Every time I put something out, it within the first week or two gets way more listens than the previous one. So if I just keep this up, those guaranteed millions of streams are bound to happen.
And you've already written like 1,000 songs, so if you just actually record them and release them, you're all set.
I need to get around to actually, yeah, right.
So there you go. All right, well, I hope you hung in there for the all that information. I know it's a lot. I hope it you get on the platform, dig around, and sort of start understanding what's there. We will be talking about pitching and a little bit more in depth about finding playlists and opportunities for dealing with playlists in the next episode in part 2. So stick around for that, and we'll catch you next time. See ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.